everyone. You're listening to 20s Toolbox here on WDIY. I'm your host, Grace Mansfield. As you know and have experienced, your 20s and young adult years are wild. One minute, you're chasing a dream you never thought you'd give up on, and the next, life throws you a curveball, and you're left questioning everything you thought you knew about who you are and where you're going. Tonight's episode is about redirection, not as failure, but as transformation, about how grief, unexpected loss, and life's sharp turns can reroute us toward the version of ourselves we didn't even know we were meant to become. My guest today, a longtime family friend of mine, knows this journey intimately. What started as one dream slowly became another. I'm really excited for you to hear his story today. If you've ever wondered if you're falling behind, if you've ever lost someone or something that changed the entire trajectory of your path, or if you're just trying to figure out what it means to build a life that feels true to you, this episode is for you. So without further ado, please welcome Tyler Rothrock to the 20s Toolbox lineup.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you, Grace. Wow, that's very good.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited to be here with you today. Tyler is a stand-up comedian and writer that appeared in the New York Comedy Festival and the Great American Comedy Festival. His album, Tyler of Nazareth, debuted at number 8 on the Billboard chart. It's been streamed over a million times. And Tyler is also the co-host of the Night Moves podcast. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I'm sure this studio is all very familiar to you with the microphones.
This is actually a little nicer than what I'm used to, believe it or not. But yeah, no, I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. So let's start off by talking a little bit about you. So can you start by telling us a little bit kind of who you are and maybe where you thought your life or your career would look like five or 10 years ago?
Five or 10 years ago, I was, I guess, in my early 30s, and I had a pretty clear goal of what I thought I did anyway. Like, I think, I was already doing stand-up. I was already, like, writing and stuff, so I wanted to make a career out of that. But, you know, when I first started, the goal was to be, like, internationally famous and rich on private planes and all that fun stuff. But then, you know, the goals start becoming more manageable as reality sets in, so 5 or 10 years ago, I was just starting to try to come up with a plan of how to just make a career at this. That didn't involve the private planes and the money, you know, just an actual career. So, and I'm still in the process of doing that. So, but I mean, if you'd say 20 years ago, I didn't even think I'd be doing this. So, kind of along with what you were saying, my path did change over the last, actually, in 5-year increments, probably.
How did you get started in comedy? Was it something that just was always fun to you from a young age, or something that kind of grew on you as you got older?
No, I didn't really know stand-up was a job, and I liked stand-up. I watched it growing up. Like, I would watch, when I would get home from school, the BET Comic View Hour would be on, so it would be like an hour showcase. And I would watch, I just loved it. I didn't really have any reference point for why I loved it. But I didn't know that that was like a job. I just thought these were very funny people. Yeah. Then I started to kind of get more into stand-up. I really like Dave Chappelle. And Dave Chappelle did an Inside the Actor's Studio. You know what that is?
Yeah, I've heard of that.
And he talked about how stand-up, the career path, you know, his dad was sick. I related a lot to the story because my dad had passed away. His dad had passed away. And before his dad passed away, Dave had already started doing stand-up. And his dad was like, this is a very hard career. No, not everybody makes it. But Dave Chappelle said a quote. He said, well, if you're a teacher, if I can make a teacher's salary doing stand-up, that's making it. Mm-hmm. And that kind of hit me. I'm like, well, yeah, if you could cobble out a little niche career here and have a comfortable life and, you know, do what you want to do, that is making it. As if that's what you feel like making it is, that's what making it is. So once I heard that, I was like, huh, that's interesting. I guess it is a career. And then I had to go to a therapist, you know, my mom. I was having a pretty, you know, dark time in my life. And I went to a therapist, and the therapist's advice was to do something to gain some self-confidence. And I told him that I've always wanted to try stand-up, and he talked me into trying stand-up. So that's really how a therapist told me to do stand-up. Wow. So I don't know if that's good therapy or not, but that's how I got into this. And then I tried it one night, and I don't think I was very good, but it just felt really good. And, you know, I like being creative, and it's a way to have instant feedback with your brain. You know, you just go out right now. There's a crowd. You think something's funny, and they'll tell you if it's is it or not.
Yeah, that's incredible. Kind of talking about the curveball aspect of life, especially in your young adult years and in your 20s, was there a particular moment in your life when you kind of realized things weren't going to go as planned? How did you initially react to that?
Well, I don't know if I ever had a plan. Like, I didn't know if I actually committed to a plan. I think I had ideas of what I would want me to be. I think sometimes we have this idea of what we want others to see us as, but it's not always what we feel strongly about being, you know? So, like, I wanted to play college basketball. That was my goal. I wanted to, like, you know, earn a scholarship to play college basketball. I worked really hard at that in high school, but I don't know if I actually really liked that, like, path. And I don't even know if I wanted that to be what I did. I think I just thought, oh, my dad's this coach. People expect me to play basketball. I want to do what they expect me to do. And I don't know if I truly don't think that was what I ever wanted. I always kind of like gravitated towards the arts, but I'm 37, so there wasn't a crossover of the arts like it is now, right? You were kind of either like a jock or in the theater department. Like these worlds didn't really collide, at least like the way I saw it. Maybe they did and I wasn't aware of it. But, you know, once I started to do stand-up, I guess that kind of – I found what I really, really wanted to do. And I don't know if I had ever really thought about that until then. Like growing up, I didn't have I didn't know you needed to want to do so. I didn't know any of this. I just kind of like did what I thought people expected me to do. So it took me a while to learn that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the world, especially today, wants to tell us, especially in your young adult years, as you're trying to, you know, build this life for yourself, like, oh, you really should do this, or this is what you're meant to do. And, you know, I love doing an episode about this and redirection because it truly is, it's the norm in your young adult years, really, as you're trying to build this.
Yeah, and, like, I think we need to understand that, like, as you, you know, go through life, whether you're going through your childhood, your, like, early adulthood, it's probably more normal to have more redirections than not. And I think we're like scared to take on different directions, probably because it's new and it's uncharted territory for us. But like even my career, there's been so many different so many different pivots, and you got to go down another path that you didn't think you would ever go down, or, you know, try this idea that you're trying to figure it out. And I don't know if that's totally a skill that we teach kids. You know, I don't know if that's totally something that we learn inherently. You know, college is great. I think there's too much pressure on kids at a young age to know who they're going to be for their next 60 years of their life.
Yeah.
That's, to me, crazy.
Yeah.
But luckily, I had no idea, so I didn't have to think about it.
I know grief has played a big role in your journey. So would you feel comfortable kind of sharing about how loss impacted the direction your life took?
Yeah. I think about this a lot. Like I had a pretty rough year where I lost my dad, a couple friends. I don't think I'd be doing stand. I don't think I'd be doing this if he still were here. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way towards him. I wanted to impress him so much with basketball and all this stuff that I probably would have gotten into coaching or something. And I also wouldn't have gone to that therapy appointment. I wouldn't have been like, that was actually a crucial turning point in my life where that therapist, you know, kind of called me on my stuff and said, well, you've wanted to do this thing. Why aren't you doing this thing? And I don't know if had I not had some of that loss that I'd even be doing this. So that's just number one. And also with loss, it puts into perspective how delicate life is and how short it is. And it's not just my own personal loss, but I see like just in general people living a life that they're kind of just going through the motions And that's scary to me, where like if when the final whistle goes off and I hadn't, if I have a body of my work of my life that I'm not proud of or I didn't enjoy, like that's got to be, to me, that's the biggest fear. Like, you know, like, and you see when life gets cut short, you lose people you love, you understand how quickly it can all go away. And you better make, it's cliche, but like making the most of the moment is pretty much the only currency we have.
Yeah.
Like time is like, that's the only real currency we have. And then when you see people get theirs cut short, it really makes you see the value in yours. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's kind of sad sometimes how that's almost always the moment that, I don't know, clicks you back into life.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, life is really short. Mm-hmm. But sometimes that's the way it happens.
Yeah, I wish it wasn't that. I wish these were lessons that you could learn without that. But it's hard, and I'm sure you can. I'm sure, you know, it's possible, but that's kind of like the cold water on the face, mm-hmm. That makes you realize it.
Grief obviously changes a lot of things. So how did grief and that kind of loss change your relationship with your dreams, your identity, your sense of purpose? Were there things you kind of let go as you grieved? And if anything, did you gain anything in their place?
I think a little bit of both. I don't know if I would have found my dream without grief. You know, because I was at such a low point, such a low, like, helpless point that I don't know if I would have taken a big chance without it. But it also has a negative impact, too, because it makes you aware of your own mortality, you know, a little bit more. So it affected kind of how I went about my own life. Career aside, just I'm a little bit more, I've been called a hypochondriac, you know. I worry about health concerns a lot. I freak out very easily. But, you know, in some of my more recent, I had a friend recently pass away, and he was a very close friend of mine. And in terms of my career, he was a big supporter of me. And when he passed away, I put a lot of pressure on myself to do things that I thought he would be proud of. And through that, his passing and, you know, dealing with, I have a great therapist. It's kind of similar to the pressure I put on myself with my dad, where I let go of some of that pressure, and I feel like I get to be myself a little bit more, you know. And like, it's weird because these people, and I don't know if it's definitely something I do that's not a good trait, where I worry about what other people think about me, you know. I consider that a lot. I mean, I do stand up. I'm in front of people that I want. They're strangers. I want them to think I'm funny. It's kind of a sickness, to be honest with you. But it's a double-edged sword because, you know, you have to be in this mindset where you're doing what makes you feel best and what makes you feel most creative. But I let what other people think of me kind of dictate sometimes, especially people that are close to me. And it's not because they're forcing me to. It's just I just want them to like me so much. So I feel like with some of the loss, I let go of some of that.
No, I really agree with that last part, just like wanting people to like you so much that it starts to dictate your whole life. Yeah, I do that.
Yeah,
I do that a lot, too.
I mean, it's you kind of, what are you supposed to do? Like, and I talk to my therapist about this a lot because you can't go through life not caring what other people think of you at all.
Right.
You can't, yeah. That's I mean, that's probably like being a sociopath, you know? And I don't know if that's but you can't do that. You can't not care, but you also can't care. There's a fine line where it's right, and it's just hard to find it, I think.
Yeah. I think it's a line that's always moving, too.
And it's always moving.
It's not going
to
stay.
Yeah, it's like a slithering snake. It's hard to catch, you know. And as your career changes, as your personal life changes, that line's also moving. As you like, so it's hard to do. I think it's a constant process of like checking in and reevaluating where you're at.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of going off of that, what do you wish kind of young adults and 20-somethings understood kind of about young adult life, especially when it comes to redirection?
Oh, I mean, the biggest lesson is your relationship with failure. Like that's, I think if I could go back, I would try to have a different relationship with failure and see it as not such a negative thing. If you fail at something that you're trying, that doesn't make you a failure as a person. You know, that you've just, you tried a thing. It's not even failing if you keep trying it. That's, mm-hmm. you know, that's an old saying. But like the failure is the best part of it all. Because you're finding who you are compared, like you're finding your unique thing. You're trying things that you think is going to work. It doesn't work. But what you're also doing is you're learning the next way to try it. You're going to find one of these ways that works for you. And without all that failure, you would never know. Mm-hmm. There's so many people that like, for example, like every kid's taught the same kind of path. And I don't know how it is now. It might be different. But like when I was growing up, go to college, major in something you want to do, and that's what you do. And you could be successful your whole childhood into college. You could have never failed. But the stakes have been relatively low the whole time. But then you're going to get to a time in adulthood where it doesn't matter who you are, you're gonna have a failure moment. If you've never been prepared for that, it's going to rock you. But if you know how to deal with failure, then you'll be able to adjust and become a bigger, you know, more, I'm not going to say successful because that doesn't, successful is all reference. It's all your, mm-hmm. where you think, but like the relationship with failure to me is the most important thing I would change about my life. If I could go back, failing has been the best thing I've ever done. It's led me to the best product every time.
Yeah, definitely. It's easier said than done, but sometimes failure should be looked at a little more positively because it shows you a lot of things you never knew were possible.
Exactly. And then because it's like you realize how it doesn't hurt it. Like it's not as impactful. Like mm-hmm. in stand-up, like, oh, what if this whole crowd doesn't like, what if they boo? Mm-hmm. And then that'll happen. And then you're like, oh, yeah, I'm still going to get my car. I'm going to go home. I'll get it like a slice of pizza. Nothing, it's not going to make, and then tomorrow they're not going to care. I'm not a failure, even though last night I didn't do well. And if you like can compartmentalize that and see everything for this like individual moment where it's just because you're failing now doesn't mean you're a failure. That's what I would tell myself. I would have had much more success and also I would have had much more fun and I would have had less anxiety growing up.
Yeah. Yeah. As my brother would say, his favorite thing to say right now is, and it's perfect. He likes to say it's not that deep.
It's not that deep. Yeah.
He's right. Sometimes it's really not. And I'm prone to this of making things a bigger deal than they need to be. And it's often my friends and family around me who are like, and my younger brother who go, you know, it's not that deep. Like you're saying, life goes on, you know?
Well, that's an awesome perspective to have because I catastrophize and, you know, the worst possible outcome is what I've already decided.
Yep.
But guess what? That's never happened. Every time. I fear the worst thing. I'm 37 years old, and I've never experienced the worst thing. What am I doing wasting my time, you know, worrying about this outcome that's a million other better outcomes are equally as likely? Easier said than done.
Yeah,
it's a work in progress, though.
I
go to therapy a lot to figure this out.
For anyone who's kind of been listening to this and, you know, feels like they're in the middle of a redirection and hasn't really reached that point yet where they're seeing it as a positive thing, what words of encouragement or guidance would you share?
Yeah, it's the scariest thing is the redirection also, by the way, is the most positive way I've heard somebody talk about it. There's, you know, redirection in itself sounds less scary than, you know, even like I said, pivot, like you pivot, mm-hmm. you try, like that implies that there's a whole scary world out there that you, because when you're redirecting, you have an idea of how to accomplish things. There's just a new path on how to do that. You know the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be okay. You have these skills that you've learned over time that will keep you out of harm's way in your new pursuit, you know? And if you just trust in those skills, you're going to be fine. It's scary, but you don't know how good that could get. You ever see that? It's a meme. I look up memes a lot. I'm a meme. There's this meme that I get sent a lot because I'm always on the, I'm always like 1 hour away from quitting stand up. Always, you know? And I mean, maybe not really, but I'm just, it's, it gets frustrating. So I get people send me this meme. I don't know if you've seen it. There's a, there's two guys, they're chiseling away at the ground and there's diamonds. And one guy has already put his chisel on his shoulder and he's walking back. He's quit. But he was like inches away from breaking through to the diamonds. And the other guy is going to get to the diamonds. So I look at that a lot because you don't know how close you are to the great thing, to something awesome. It could be right around the corner. Mm-hmm. It could not be right around the corner. You don't know. And when you take that new direction, you don't know how close you are to something great. But if you do know, if you keep doing it the way you've been doing it, how that pans out.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
So yeah, it's the scariest thing. But when you're an old man like me, the things that have scared you are going to be the things that you're most proud of.
Yeah, I talk about it on the show a lot. But when I first got to college, I'll be in my third year now in the fall, which mm-hmm. is crazy. I wanted to be a doctor. I came to University of Scranton. I was like, I'm going to be a pre-med major, taking all these biology and chemistry classes. And I was like, you know what? This is not what I want to do. This doesn't make me happy anymore. Mm. And the minute I pivoted, redirected myself, picked a communications degree, the doors just started opening. Mm. Sure enough, I'm, you know, doing this show.
Right.
And it just kept happening where I was like, okay, maybe this is, this redirection was good.
What was the scariest part of that decision? Was it leaving what you thought you wanted? Because I think that's also scary.
Yes, I think it was. I had this image in my head of, you know, being a doctor, and I really wanted to work at CHOP because I had been mm-hmm. a patient there for a while, and kind of choosing something else that I knew I wanted was really scary, and just kind of doing this new thing, even though I knew I wanted it, there was a part of me that was hesitant because I didn't know if it was the thing.
Did it make you feel like a failure? Because your goal that you went in with, you're changing? That's what I get sometimes, yeah. Where, because I don't know how stand-up's going to go. I don't know how this mm-hmm. is all. I might have to pivot out of it at some point. I might, who knows? You don't know what is going to happen with the world. Are people going to even want to come see me ever? You know, so there might be a tough day that I have to decide to not do it. And I just hope that I approach it the way you approached. Because that you approached that decision with maturity well beyond your years. That's something that a lot of people could never do. There are people that have been in their jobs and their careers for 30 years that have been wanting to not do it, but they just don't have the whatever it is that you had in you that during that time period to make the adjustment. And that's sad, I think. And I just hope, I think the best thing about life is those moments. You can look back and be like, wow, I did that. Like, I thought I was going to do this thing. And it's like kind of like heroic that you just like, nope, I'm going this other way. And you make a new path for yourself. I'm sure I'll be faced with that decision at some point in my life, whether it's in one way or another. I hope that I handle it the way that you've handled that. That's kind of like the goal. Because, yeah, we're in the studio. This is fun, you know.
Yeah.
It's air conditioning. It's very cool in here, you know. So you're doing great.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for that. As we begin to close today, I kind of want to ask you, so what's the dream now? What's next?
I don't know. I it's the same one. I want to make a career out of this. I want to make stuff. I think that's what I've kind of shifted my focus from my early days into, and I'm still doing it. It's a process where I'm trying not to focus on the result and where I'm at, how many tickets I'm selling, you know, the money, all that stuff. I'm just trying to focus on the making of the thing, you know, and the thing I like to make. And I think that is what, in a creative profession, that's what the people really like anyway. I look at people that are successful in this business, and it's almost exclusively people that did whatever they wanted to do and didn't know how to do it, wasn't a great product, figured it out. And I think I've been scared to do that this whole time. I'm going to try to do more of that, where I'm less worried about what people think of it and just do the thing I want. And then hopefully it gets good enough and people relate to it and want to watch it or whatever.
Yeah. One final question for you that I ask all my guests, kind of reflecting your career thus far. What's the best advice you've ever received? Could be about anything.
The best advice, there was a young baseball player that said, it's not that deep, you know? No, that truly, yeah. I mean, yeah. There's been variations of of that advice, but that is kind of, I got advice early on about how you treat people, right? Like you're, what we're doing isn't that important, stand-up wise. What I'm doing is, I'm not curing cancer. So don't take yourself too seriously and be nice to everybody because you don't know. And then the way they gave me this advice is, you don't know who you're not being nice to. They could be in a position to help you. But that in itself has elements of selfishness in it. Mm-hmm. You know, like I have karma, you know, over here. So karma, I have a interesting relationship with karma, because if you do something nice on the grounds that means something good will happen to you, that doesn't make you a great person. You know, you're trying to get rewarded. So I just think, just be good. And don't outsource the universe to do your dirty work, you know, like whatever.
Yeah.
But I just think, just don't take yourself too seriously and try to just have as much fun. Mm-hmm. And it's not that deep.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Well, he will be very happy that you. Yeah. No, it's great advice. That advice.
It's short. It's very. It's impactful.
Right to the point.
It's right to the point, and it kind of, you can say it at any moment. Mm-hmm. And it will put you in your place a little bit.
Yep. Oh, so. And he likes to say it a lot. He likes to say it a lot. Well, Tyler, thank you so much for coming on the show. This was so much fun. Thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah.
You know, redirection isn't always something we choose. Sometimes it chooses us.
Sure.
And sometimes that's really cool. To not know where the path is obviously really scary, but sometimes it's pretty cool to see where it leads to.
And just like, you know, as you've went through it, it leads to good things. And you should be so proud of yourself.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, you've been listening to 20s Toolbox here on WDIY. I'm Grace Mansfield here with Tyler Rothrock. Thanks so much for being here. Until next time, everyone, keep going. And remember, you're not lost. You're just being redirected.